Good evening, folks. Incendiary Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, December 11th, 2022. Well, the pace is very, very fast now. Things are moving in so many ways and directions with the machinations. It's very, very hard for many of us to try to even keep up with it all. So I've been meaning to read a little bit out of this. Protocol 20, Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, because this is property tax and real estate tax season for many people across the country, depending on which state you live in. So if you own property, if you own real estate, they got their hooks in you, and I know there's ways out of it, and, you know, people on this network for decades have been talking about reading through the minutia and the fine print and freeing yourselves from this false constructed system that's all around us. But there's still many people that are completely submerged into it. Okay, so Protocol 20. Today we shall touch upon the financial program, which I put off to the end of my report as being the most difficult, the crowning, and the decisive point of our plans. Before entering upon it, I will remind you that I have already spoken before by way of a hint when I said that the sum total of our actions is settled by the question of figures. Isn't that interesting? Everything with these folks is figures. The numbers they float around. 6 million. Blah, 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 blah. Trillion here. Billion so forth here. When we come into our kingdom, our autocratic government will avoid, from a principle of self-preservation, sensibly burdening the masses of the people with taxes, remembering that it plays the part of father and protector. But as state organization costs dear, it is necessary nevertheless to obtain the funds required for it. It will therefore elaborate with particular precaution the question of equilibrium in this matter, our rule in which the king will enjoy the legal fiction that everything in his state belongs to him, will be enabled to resort to the lawful confiscation of all sums of every kind for the regulation of their circulation in the state. From this follows that taxation will best be covered by a progressive tax on property. In this manner, the dues will be paid without straightening or ruining anybody in the form of a percentage of the amount of property. The rich must be aware that it is their duty to place a part of their superfluities at the disposal of the state, since the state guarantees them security of possession of the rest of their property and the right of honest gains. I say honest, for the control over property will do away with robbery on a legal basis. Well, we've moved into another kind of world now where nobody has any security. So the cabal that orders Mr. Soros to do what he does by placing the Gascones in the Los Angeles prosecuting attorney's office, the Chesa Boudins and up there in San Francisco, the Wesley Bells in St. Louis, the Kim Fox in Chicago, the Kim Gardner in St. Louis City, these type of folks all over the country. Now there is no security for anyone. They've moved into the total chaos, let's just say, realm here, to where now the boots on the neck, everybody's still got to pay all these exorbitant fees and taxes to the state, and yet they have no security. Nothing is sacred anymore. A tax increasing in a percentage ratio to capital will give a much larger venue than that, than the present individual or property tax, which is useful to us now for the sole reason that it excites trouble and discontent among the goyim. You know, eventually, so many of these people that are taking part in the destabilization, especially at the street level, don't realize that they are going to be liquidated very, very in a crushing, crushing manner. All right. So let's see here. So Brazil, Bolsonaro. Okay, he came out and made some statements. I'm sure most of us have seen this stuff. We're getting reports from all over different places that the military is, let's just say, putting itself in place around this country of Brazil. Very, very crazy country, by the way. When you watch some of the stuff that goes on down there and some of these kind of deep video platforms, this the ruthlessness and the, I mean, it really mimics some of the stuff going on up here in our cities. A lot of poverty, a lot of helplessness, a lot of ruthlessness. And I'm looking at these parallels going on with Peru and Chile, okay? So, and, you know, people are looking at the totality of this Western Hemisphere and talking about the placement of Marxists all throughout all the governments in the Western Hemisphere, just about. There's some holdouts, but from Trudeau, you know, all the way down in here to Chile and so forth, there's an overwhelming majority of Marxists, okay? So Peru's President Pedro Castillo replaced by Dina Boluarte after impeachment. Peru has a female president for the first time after ex-president Pedro Castillo was impeached hours after he tried to dissolve parliament. Okay, Dina Boluarte, previously the vice president, was sworn in after a dramatic day in Lima on Wednesday. Early in the day, Mr. Castillo has said he was replacing Congress with an exceptional emergency government, but lawmakers ignored this, and an emergency meeting impeached him. He was then detained and accused of rebellion. Wouldn't that be great if we had some lawmakers that weren't all just full-blown totalitarians themselves, which is, you know, almost lock, stock, and barrel the entire Democratic Party. Now we've had this Kyrsten Sinema leaving the party in the Senate. What this means will have to play out. It's interesting. We'll see what Mr. Manchin does. You know, the Sinema saw what happened in her state with Carrie Lake and Blake Masters and Abe what Hamada, I think his name is, running for AG. I mean, the whole state was stolen. Just nuts. And so, you know, how this is going to play out. But back to Peru. Reports in local media say he was headed to the Mexican embassy in the capital when he was arrested. Okay, so interesting there. Now you've got in Chile, okay? Chilean president impeached over Pandora Papers revelation. This was, you know, last year, but this is like kind of, you see how all of the governments in Central and South America are like just so fluid right now. And look at our government, same thing, very, very fluid. So, you know, about a year ago, this happened in Chile. And, you know, the power of the Catholic Church in Central and South America cannot be underestimated the power of the Jesuits. They've been running skullduggery operations on these people for centuries. And they, you know, they're running them up here on us, along with their Jewish buddies, okay? The Jews couldn't get this stuff off without their minions and cronies in the Protestant and Catholic churches. You know, when you read about all these powerful Jesuits that surround Pope Francis, anti-Pope Francis, in all of these powerful positions in the Vatican, you know, so many people are just blowing the alarm on the fact that all of these top, very, very influential posts are in the Vatican are staffed by these Jesuits who have just, you know, just so many prominent people throughout history over the last 500 years, 400, whatever, how many years, that have, you know, alarmed their fellow men and citizens and countrymen about the machinations of this gang. Just as many that have done so against organized Jewish malfeasance. It's really a strong parallel between these two groups. And there's so much bleed over between them. You got to keep you got to have your eyes peeled on both of these, you know, organizations. You know, everybody needs to keep your eye on the Conference of Presidents of all the major Jewish organizations, and just keep up on that. You see how they all act in concert, like especially with this Kanye West stuff. How, you know, the World Jewish Congress, the ADL, they all come out and they all train their guns on the target. They all exert their influence behind the scenes. So what this looks like is a Western Hemisphere martial law op in the making. Okay, so something happens in Brazil and this goes under some sort of a military temporary provisional type government. How this is going to play out here with our election crises that have happened over the last couple elections. I mean, it's been this way for a long time, but the blatantness of it, the everything coming to the surface of just how pathetic it all is. We could see some definite, you know, things coming down the pike. Let's talk about this New Zealand baby Will thing. And I, you know, if this is all real, I really feel for this couple that, you know, and this isn't the first time. Like back in September, there was another incident where a baby went in for some sort of procedure, and they gave that baby blood from a dubious, probably vaccinated source, and then the baby ended up dying. That was back in September. That was all over the alternative media. Now you have this child. I mean, I hope it's not some, you know, hoax or whatever, you know, some kind of a demoralization operation. It's just so hard to discern true news stories versus things that are planted by the intelligence agencies. But if it's all on the up and up, I mean, it's this Jacinda Ardern and this New Zealand government, you know, if that's true, that, you know, the if there's any decent, you know, governments left in the Western world, I tell you what, you wouldn't want me to be president of this country. If I saw something like that and I knew it was legit, I would send in a freaking team of, you know, operators and extract that whole family from that rotten country and bring them here, let the baby have, you know, the procedure done by some of our doctors. You know, we had plenty of doctors here in the States that were ready and they had clean blood and they would have did it and everything. But, you know, remember when the whole thing happened, when I think Trump was still in office, and I made comments on the air that it's just like when Australia went into this brutal, goofy, like, experiment where they were just beating their people and just enforcing the harshest lockdown management, quote-unquote, system. I was just like, we might need to declare war on Australia, the Australian government, and overthrow these bastards and you know, due to the fact that they were just so over the top. I remember this to this day. People are really blowing the alarm about strep A and this flu nasal spray that's going around in the UK especially. A bunch of kids are already dead from strep A. And then part of the insert to the this nasal spray, a flu nasal spray, is strep A. People are blowing the alarm on that. People are talking about you know, hundreds and hundreds of tanks and 2,000 military vehicles in Poland right now. You know, this buildup of, and everybody's kind of like, you know, oh my God, we're on the verge of nuclear war. And the hijacker sent me something. He's like, one thing Russia knows is that once NATO and Russia openly go toe to toe, there's no way Russia can defeat NATO's combined air power. By the hour and by the day, Russia will be weakened until she knows that either they use their nukes or lose air power to deliver them. Before any of this happens, Russia is going to first strike us, like the prophecy said from Dmitry Dodeman. Well, you know, Joel Skousen's been talking about that forever. We're truly on the verge of a nuclear WW3. Well, look, if depopulation and, you know, whatever the demons that are controlling these world leaders are telling them, you know, a lot of these people are possessed by evil spirits, you know, and they do the bidding of what these spirits are telling them. Now, you have automatic writing. You've had these ascended masters from the New Age, you know, your Alice Bailey types, the all these people that have taken the dictates in, you know, in these various books, you know, Blavatsky, all these people, they, you know, they do the bidding of these evil entities that influence and inhabit human beings, you know, cataclysmic mass death, you know, these evil forces, they get off on that. They like to see God's creation and his highest creation, which is man, lowered to hamburger in explosions, whether they're, you know, conventional, nuclear, whatever. Let's see. Let's get clip three ready, Mr. Producer. This is called Gearing Up for the Great Culling. Okay, this was floating around this week. Let's listen to that one real quick.
Hi, I'm Kate Shimarani, natural nurse in a toxic world, co-founder of the British Nursing Alliance and health advisor and nurse on Sons of Liberty Radio USA. You can catch that live on Rumble and many other platforms that you'll find on our Telegram page, British Nursing Alliance, at 1 p.m. on Saturdays. Jeremy Hunt has just announced, as Chancellor that he's going to allow social services and the government to take 100,000 from our elderly's assets when they go into the hospitals and the social care settings. Why is that significant? Well, anyone who's been watching any of my recent interviews, both with Majid Nawaz, Charlie Ward, I've also just done one with Sasha Stone, where I've talked about the protocol NG191, which has been replacing the NG163. This is the end-of-life pathway which they are putting the elderly and disabled on in the hospitals. And that pathway involved morphine and midazolam with NG163. And now it is remdesivir, benzodiazepines and opioids, which is lorazepam as well. And our country has just ordered huge amounts of lorazepam. And it may interest you to know that in February 2020, the shares for lorazepam in 1 month went up by 34%. So they knew worldwide that this was going to be used. Now, they are putting more and more people on this end-of-life pathway. And you can go and look up the palliative care funding review. And that palliative care funding review tells you that they're going to be increasing the palliative care. And it also gives you on one of those pages on that palliative care funding review, which is page 64, it tells you the amount that the deaths of the elderly is going to go up by 2031, which is when their plan goes up to. Now, we had the planned, or we have the planned tariff incentivized euthanasia point system in this country. And at this moment, 1,642.5 patients must be euthanized in England alone every day, and that includes disabled children, in order for hospitals to get their money. And this is also extended in the care homes. If they go below that target, they lose money. If they go above that target, they gain money. How do they euthanize, which is illegal? They hasten death, and they hasten death by using protocol NG191. It's actually a guideline. And NG191 is remdesivir, benzodiazepines, and opioids. And who is being put on that? The elderly and the disabled. And they're using algorithms. So if you have comorbidities, which it states on page 64 of the palliative care funding, and what it actually states is that the changing demographic with the aging population with chronic diseases and trajectories and greater comorbidities provide further incentives to improve and expand palliative care provision. Provide further incentives, that's money, to expand palliative, that's increase the amount of people they're going to kill using NG191. And it also tells you with the expected number of deaths by age between 2011 and 2031 is expected to rise in the 65 plus. It's expected to rise from 370,814 to 448,507 by 2031, minimum. And if they just ordered all that lorazepam, and we know that they gave our elderly five times the amount of the midazolam, five times the amount they should have had during that first 3 months of lockdown. It's all there. The cull is coming. The big, big cull. The one they talk about with the war rooms and gearing up because they're going to have COVID and flu, even though they've just injected everybody with the COVID booster, the flu shot, the shingles shot and the pneumonia shot. Yes, some elderly in the care homes have just received all of that, their fifth booster as well. Doctors in private clinics who work in the NHS are seeing all of these.
You know, I just lost my aunt, 94. And they probably, who knows what they shot her up with right before she passed. You know, she was in a facility. You know, this, and I can guarantee you the same protocols are being pushed all over the Western world. Look at the expansion of the MAID, medical assistance and dying stuff going on up there in Canada under Trudeau Castro. It sucks to have to really, all of us that are watching this go down, and we actually know and have watched this unfold and have documented this all along the way. You know, because we were, when these injections rolled out, a lot of us were like, well, we'll have to see how this plays out. And, you know, you hope that a lot of them were spoiled, as some of these doctors have talked about, due to the temperatures that they were supposed to be kept at versus what they actually were kept at. And, you know, you hope and you pray that, you know, the supernatural force that governs this universe and keeps it afloat, so to speak, might have mitigated some of the evil plans, and maybe some of this stuff didn't take as well as they thought it would, due to the fact that the Almighty possibly blocking this in some of the people. Some of the, you know, you just don't know. Placebos, different experiments going on, and all this. But it seems like right now, with the amount of people that are really starting to collapse and have complications, clots, strokes, and all this, prominent people, sports people, Celine Dion, stiff person syndrome, really? I mean, the goofy stuff that we're seeing, it's just, it's fascinating to really watch the celebrities, due to the fact that so many of us thought that they were going to be spared, due to the fact that they were the quote-unquote initiated. They were the, you know, elites, so to speak. They were, well, we all thought they were going to get placebos. They probably thought they were going to get placebos. It's interesting to see that Justin Bieber's and his wife and Celine Dion's and these sort of people. All right, we'll see you guys on the other side of the break. We got a lot more stuff to jump into.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Summery warm, and the stag in the forest runs free. We're gathered together to greet the storm. Tomorrow belongs to me. Tomorrow belongs to me. The branch of the linden is leafy and green, and the ramp is its gold to the sea. But somewhere a glory waits unseen. Tomorrow belongs to me. Tomorrow belongs to me.
All right, we're back. City Area Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mr. Producer, get clip four ready. And this is Dr. Tenpenny, and I just happened to catch this clip. She was on with Stu Peters from Died Suddenly fame of recent. And I talked about how a lot of people are coming at the crew over there at Stu Peters, you know, Dr. Brian Artis and Jane Ruby and all that stuff. But this is Dr. Tenpenny, and this is just an interesting, you know, kind of prediction from her. Go ahead and play clip four.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Stu. And it just was a natural extension because I've been doing this for 22 years. You know, I started talking about problems associated with vaccines in September of 2000. And so they are all bioweapons. They are all nasty grams. They all have things in them. I've said forever that these vaccines are injecting foreign matter into our children. And somehow we have been deluded into believing that it does something good for their health. Well, it's the same thing that can be said about these COVID shots. We've been deluded. We've been feared. We've been scammed. We've been coerced. We've been strong-armed into believing that this is something that we must inject into our body. And we are now seeing that tsunami of deaths arriving that I've been talking about since the beginning of 21. We're now seeing it arrive. It's no longer coming. It's here.
Do you think that we're only at the tip of the iceberg here for the amount of death that we're going to see attributed to these shots, if we're being honest?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are at the very, very front end. I pictured in my mind, Stu, like if you were surfing out on the Big Island in Hawaii, those great big colossal 50-foot waves that come in, you know, I think it's in the wintertime when the surfers go out and surf those waves. I see this tsunami of death, like those big waves coming on shore right now for the surfers. It's only just begun, and it's going to go on for years.
Do you think I'm wrong? I believe that the majority of the population still doesn't associate these deaths with these shots.
They can't. It causes so much cognitive dissonance to know that they volunteered. There was no such thing as a mandate. No such thing. You could always say no. But you volunteered eventually and you said, well, my husband made me do it, or my adult children made me do it, or my boss, or I had to keep my job, or I wanted to see my grandkids, or I was afraid I was going to get sick and die, and on and on and on. But at the end of the day, the people who got injected sat in the chair and rolled up their sleeves. And now that the truth is really coming out about all of the different death things that are happening, that it's very hard for people to get their head around the fact that they volunteered to allow this to happen to them. It's easier to live in denial and to refuse it and to say that it's just a bunch of conspiracy theories. You know, in your film, Steve Kirsch said that you can divide divide the deaths into two categories, acute and maybe long term. Actually, there's four categories. The first is a sudden death, really sudden death that dies within, you know, the first 2 to 3 days after getting the shot. And then there is spike protein death, that can, what's happening to all the myocarditis and the cardiovascular, the neurological things with the spike proteins. And yes, they are there. And that is anywhere from 3 to 5 years. The autoimmune diseases that are going to happen from the antibodies to the spike proteins and to the other foreign matter, like the SM102, the polyethylene glycol, all the additional antibodies that are being made to the ingredients that we know about. And we don't, there's a whole bunch of things we don't even still know what's in them. That antibody response causing autoimmune disease, multi-organ system failure against your heart, your kidneys, your lungs, your liver is going to go on for decades. It'll be going on for 3 to 10 years. Some of the immunologists I spoke to early on said, that we are in big trouble. We are going to see the unbelievable uptick of autoimmune disease over the next 10 years, unlike anything we have ever seen before. So there's sudden death, there's spike protein death, there is autoimmune disease, and then there's the other, the upticks in the cancers, the upticks in the infertility, the upticks in the early fetal demise, the third trimester children, babies, infants that are dying for. We don't know why the doctors are so perplexed that suddenly we're seeing all these infants dying in utero in the third trimester for no apparent reason, except, oh, by the way, their mom got a shot, well, got one of the COVID shots while they were pregnant. So there are, and then there's the miscellaneous other types of deaths from the hydrogel, from the graphene oxide, from the other types of chemical reactions, and then add in some EMF frequencies. And we are going to just see people just continue to die suddenly, like you said in your film, and also long-term, slow, degrading deaths.
Mm. And you can stop it there. And it really goes into the kind of the theorizing that we've done on this broadcast, talking about the plausible deniability, and then the evil genius of these bastards, of how they're like, look, we're going to kill some of them quick. We're going to kill some of them this way, that way, and every way from Sunday. And we'll and see this. I mean, it's, you got to give it to these creeps. I mean, they're, you know, the devil inspires some really twisted things in people's minds. You know, when people talk about psychopathy and sociopathy. I really kind of equate that with like spiritual death in this person. When you become a psychopath, sociopath, you have no conscience, you have no empathy for others and that sort of thing. This is when their conscience gets, like the Bible says, seared as with a hot iron. That means they can't, they have no natural affection left. You know, these are all prophecies about the end of days. I was looking at an article, I got it up here, and this is on Israel 365 News. It used to be called Breaking Israel, Breaking Israel News or something like that now, but it's called 39% of U.S. believes we are currently in the end of times, Pew survey suggests. And then it gets into 47% of Christians believe we're in the end time. All right. This is further divided along sectarian lines. 76% of black Christians believe we're currently in the end of times, and 63% of Protestants believe this to be true, evangelical Protestants. 49% of Christians say that we are not living the end times, including 70% of Catholics and 65% of mainline Protestants. 29% of non-Christian religions believe we're at the end of time. And that's probably Islam and other stuff. And 23% with no religious affiliation. Just interesting, you know, people doing these, and I take polls with a grain of salt, but it's kind of fascinating. Let's get clip two ready. And this is about patient blood management. And so this goes along with these pure blood kind of blood bank movements we're seeing kind of sprouting up. You know, people that are unvaxxed are really to the point, it's like, I do not want another person's blood in me. And, you know, my mom, she had like this, you know, irritable bowel, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's type stuff, whatever you want to call it. It's like a family of, you know, bowel issues. And she had to get some years back, she got real jacked up with her blood count, and she had a bunch of different blood transfusions. And guess what? It put all of these markers into her blood now, to where if she needs any more blood, she can barely find it due to the fact that she's got all of these, and I can't remember what they're called, blood factors or something in there now. But anytime you take a transfusion, and this blood supposedly matches your type and everything else, you're taking on toxins from another human being. Let's go ahead and roll clip two.
Blood is the vital fluid that flows through us and sustains every organ in our body. We often take it for granted until we become sick and need surgery. During most surgeries, our bodies may lose blood, and a doctor may recommend a blood transfusion, especially in the event of an emergency. Most doctors and hospitals view blood transfusions as life-saving and part of the established medical standard of practice. However, recent scientific evidence has shown that patients who receive blood transfusions are putting themselves at risk for further complications, disease, and even death. Today, many patients are clamoring for safer and more effective options than blood transfusions that carry significant risk and may even be unnecessary. In this operating room at Englewood Hospital in New Jersey, you're seeing the future of medicine, and it's called patient blood management. Englewood Hospital and Medical Center in New Jersey has pioneered the use of state-of-the-art medical and surgical techniques which virtually eliminate the need for blood transfusions. Patient blood management is a dramatic advancement in patient care, and the results indicate shorter hospital stays, faster recovery, and overall better outcomes, even for those undergoing major medical and surgical procedures such as open heart surgery or cancer therapy. Since 1994, the Institute for Patient Blood Management and Bloodless Medicine and Surgery has led the medical world with its groundbreaking vision.
I practice patient blood management because it turns out to be the best medicine. It's a complex, multidisciplinary effort with a lot of thinking in advance, but basically you're serving the patient's needs. It's safer medicine, anticipating bleeding, preventing it, treating anemia, all without transfusion. That's bedrock medical care. And we have proven at Englewood that that translates into better outcomes.
Here at Englewood, the data speaks for itself. Patient blood management offers scientifically proven benefits for all types of patients, shorter hospital stays, faster recovery, less risk of complications, and fewer postoperative infections.
So the Bloodless program, I'm extraordinarily grateful to them, both personally and professionally. I honestly feel it's a gift that I've been given professionally that has made me far better doctor than I otherwise would. They forced us to learn early what is now clearly the right medicine for everybody.
The avoidance of transfusion can be very beneficial, and in many instances, transfusions can be detrimental to patients. So it's really an all-around good practice in medicine to be practicing patient blood management techniques.
Englewood became the first hospital in the country to offer patient blood management as a standard of care to all its patients.
Stop it there. it's kind of interesting, you know, that people are, you know, moving in this direction. You know, in the Bible, the life is in the blood. Taking on a stranger's blood into your body. You know, most people, you know, wouldn't even give it a thought years ago. But now people are like, you know what, maybe this isn't such a great idea to take all these foreign, who knows what that's floating and we know that the blood banks now, all the scandals about them, not even screening for, you know, all these diseases anymore. And now with the advent of these shots, these injections, and now you're seeing these people trying to force injected people's blood into non-injected people. I mean, this is some nefarious stuff. Let's get clip five ready. This is Breanne Dressen. She was an AstraZeneca, you know, she volunteered, I guess, for the AstraZeneca vaccine. I mean, what kind of person and their level of understanding big pharma and so forth that would subject themselves to a vaccine trial? You know, here in the St. Louis area, you've got all these kind of pharma research places where they pay desperate people, you know, a decent sums of money to lock them in these places over like a couple day period and try these drugs on them and all this stuff. I mean, it's a real quirky and creepy world we live in, where you got these, you know, people that are addicted to drugs and this sort of thing, or whatever, gambling addicts, subjecting themselves to all these medical trials, and they basically have to sign their lives away, their rights and everything, and they go get locked in these little crazy places. And who knows? I mean, these places could be DARPA fronts, or, you know, IARPA fronts. You don't even know it. And these people, oh yeah, well, you just take this pill, and we'll pay you $500 for staying overnight. And they don't know what the hell's going. You know what I mean? We don't even know what the hell they're doing to these people. But let's go ahead and play clip five.
Unfortunately, I'm not alone. I participated in a clinical trial for AstraZeneca, and now I suffer from a severe debilitating form of neuropathy that will progress until I am essentially left in a care home. I'm not alone in my struggle. Unfortunately, there are other clinical trial participants that are dealing with the same thing. There's Olivia Tessenauer, who's a Moderna clinical trial participant, who now has severe and rare T-cell lymphoma. She's coded as moderate lymphadenopathy in the report. I'm not even in my report. Augusto Rue with Pfizer, severe and lasting neurocardiogenic side effects. He's coded as fully recovered. Maddie DeGary, a 12-year-old, confined to a wheelchair, feeding tube, coded as a stomach ache. This progressed on to the public rollout. 1 in 3 reports and VAERS. We don't know what's happening to these reports. Where are these people? We found over 20,000 COVID vaccine injured in just a short year, with Joel and I founding an organization that's dedicated to advocating for the healing of these people who are suffering. The NIH knows. They flew us out. They researched us. They also help people with secret protocols that the public still does not know about. I know, because I was one of those people that was given those protocols that Joel and I now use daily to help prevent severe disease from happening to people who are newly injured. The FDA also knows all of this. And when we've talked to them about these secrets, the response that we got was, there are no secrets here. There is one word that summarizes what's happening to the COVID vaccine injured. There is one word to describe us, and it is ghost. But there is one very important message I would like to selfishly share for the injured. I want them to know that the fight is just now heating up, and please stay with us. Do not give the drug companies one more ounce or one more minute of your life than they already have taken. If you do that, they win. Thank you.
All right, you can stop that there. You know, for those of us that have been paying attention to, you know, all the different quote unquote alternative media platforms for all these years to you know, even fathom someone at the beginning of this operation to subject themselves to some sort of trials for these injections. It's just it's so foreign of a concept to all of us. But we all live and work and, you know, hang out around people that they sit there and they watch that tube, that boob tube, and that's where they get a lot of their information, or they're right on that Facebook. There's so many people that's where they live on freaking social media like Facebook. I'm like, you can't even talk to these people because, you know, it's just the wall there. I mean, and it, look, some of this stuff is crumbling for a lot of people, but there are people that are double, triple, and quadruple down on their programming, and they view it as something that they have to hold on to, because if they give up even the slightest millimeter of their programming, then it feels like their entire world's going to crash down around them. And, you know, it's like the people, you know, they're still stuck in sports and college football and the NFL and, you know, all this college basketball. And it's just like, this is their kind of their security blanket, to where this is a place they can run to resume a sense of normalcy, to lock themselves away in their house, get in their comfortable chair, and, you know, get out their Fritos and watch this stuff, because it gives them a sense that they can go back to their, you know, their younger days, their childhood, when things were more, you know, normal, and they weren't racing towards this catechism of collapse, of, you know, currency reorganization, the central bank digital stuff that's coming, the Internet of Things and bodies, and the surveillance grid that just keeps tightening around them more and more and more. It's fascinating, but it, you know, it can get you down too. So you gotta have an outlet of some sort to, you know, a spiritual foundation in order to, you know, wade through this tide of evil. Let's go to clip 9 real quick. We got time for this one. Now this is Josh Sterling, an insurance analyst. He was sitting right next to Ed Dowd at the Ron Johnson hearings. That young lady, Breanne Dressen, was also there testifying. She had Del Bigtree sitting right next to her. But this is about insurance and death and all that stuff. That, you know, Ed Dowd's been doing that too, but this is Josh Sterling. Go ahead and play clip 9.
The senator asked us to show just the one chart that tells the entire story. This is that chart. The UK government, until this summer, was reporting a data series that showed the relative mortality rates for the vaccinated and unvaccinated by the number of doses of the vaccine. We've done what we think is really professional work with this, and we think it simplifies down to a conclusion that says that through the last available data set, the people in the UK who took the vaccine have a 26% higher mortality rate. The people who are under the age of 50 who took the vaccine now have a 49% higher mortality rate. And worst of all, the people who only took one dose of the vaccine have approximately 145% worse mortality rate. That last data point is on its face confusing, especially because it seems like there's more and more, it just doesn't make a ton of sense, unless you realize that what's going on with this really is that the people who took the dose, the first dose, in the United States, that's about 12% of people, but then stopped taking any other doses, those people, through their choice to stop, disproportionately the ones who were harmed. And so what we're concluding is that if you happen to be an unlucky person who was in some fashion even moderately injured, with a minor injury, you decided not to continue, the statistics, the best statistics we have, show that you're going to have, at least through today, maybe it'll get better, you know, and obviously we're all here because we're hoping to find treatments and cures and screening and interventions, you know, but if that doesn't happen, we have to assume that this is now the baseline, there's going to be 145% higher mortality. And if you were to take these numbers and just apply them to the United States, that ends up being something like 600,000 excess deaths per year in the United States from this higher vaccine-induced mortality. And, you know, that's obviously a really concerning thing, and I'm happy you called the meeting, and I know we all hoping to get to answers. Thank you.
And again, I thought that statistic on single dose was pretty interesting because, let's face it, just about everybody knows somebody who took, the first dose and had a severe reaction, they're not going to take the second one. So,
all right, you can stop that there. So very fascinating. Orlando International Airport fuel storage shortage may impact flights. I mean, just over the top. This orchestrated scarcity that keeps coming and coming and coming. We'll see. All right. Second hour coming your way.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.